Thank you, Ted. And I'm glad to be here and want to start by just giving a thank you to this congregation, which is very different than when I was here in the 70s and 80s. But I still see many familiar faces and feel that I'm among friends and do feel that I was really nurtured and brought up in the faith in this congregation. So I'm very grateful to many of you. Family systems theory has been a life giver and a life saver for me at some critical times in my personal, family, and pastoral life. So my sermon title this morning comes from my study and experience of family systems, a shorthand tool that I think I came up with that helps me remember my priorities when stress or crisis threatens to knock me over. Stay calm, stay clear, stay connected. But when I was asked if I would preach on resilience in the face of church conflict, family systems is not the first thing that came to my mind. The first thing that came to my mind was Mark chapter 13. I thought of this chapter that is often ignored unless you want to preach about the end times. But this image had recently struck me as being relevant to what's happening in our denomination and conference. So as the chapter opens, Jesus and his disciples are coming out of the temple in Jerusalem, and the disciples are admiring these beautiful cut stones and this massive structure that's been made from them, the amazing handiwork. This temple is the central symbol of their religious institutional life. And Jesus' comment is, "Not one of these stones will be left on top of the other. They will all be thrown down." So when I went back to this chapter to see whether it might talk to us about resilience in our current situation, I was interested in some other lines that jumped out at me. Wars and rumors of wars. That might be a little strong to describe what happened at Kansas City last summer. But a little further on, this verse was not read this morning, but brother will betray brother to death, a father his child, and children will rise against parents. And then I thought about how it felt to many at Benton Mennonite Church when our mother congregation, Clinton Frame, the church where a good number of our older people were baptized and married, where parents and children and brothers and sisters still attend, Clinton Frame decided to leave our conference and our denomination. And people at Benton were stunned, grief-stricken. How can this be? What's happening? This chapter that we've often assumed is Jesus preparing his followers for the end times, I credit biblical scholar N.T. Wright for helping me see that it might be seen as Jesus preparing his followers for the destruction of this temple, this religious institution. And of course, we know that these stones that were so admired by Jesus' disciples were, in fact, thrown down by the Roman Empire in AD 70, about 40 years after Jesus' active ministry. There are limits to the parallels between these situations, but I'm convinced that we can learn something from these words of Jesus in this chapter. I want to give credit to one more of my mentors in the way I think about this and put this together, and that is Walter Wink. Specifically, this morning I'll be lifting out some of his ideas from his book, Naming the Powers. Because Wink lays out the ways that human institutions, whether political, religious, social, economic, human institutions are formed and blessed by God to help human beings live together, work together, do the things, accomplish the things that we're called to accomplish. But these institutions can also take on, also do take on a life of their own and become the powers, or in Wink's words, the domination system, and can begin to work against the very people for whose good they were formed. So the temple, it was an important part of the life, the religious life of Jesus and of his followers. They're coming out of the temple. They've been in the temple as they have this conversation. As far as we know, Jesus was a faithful temple goer from the time he was 12. At the same time, Jesus was well aware of the seductive and destructive potential of religious power and religious institutions. One of the temptations he faced in the wilderness was at the temple, about how he would use religious power. And just two chapters before this story in Mark, Jesus confronted the economic powers of the temple, calling it a den of robbers. So the disciples pressed Jesus for details. When is this going to happen? How will we know? When will these stones fall? And Jesus begins with the word that's translated beware, but I would rather translate keep a lookout, pay attention, so that no one leads you astray. And when you hear about these wars and rumors of wars, don't be alarmed. This is but the beginning of the birth pangs. It would be interesting to have a conversation about what might be being born out of the conflict and messiness that we now find ourselves in. But interestingly, that's not where Jesus goes. He doesn't go on to describe what's being born. He offers a tantalizing reframing of what's happening, but then he goes on. He stays with the messiness and the pain of the moment. And Jesus offers counsel that looks to me like resilience. So now I'm looking at the entire chapter of Mark 13 that we heard the first 8 verses of. And I just want to point out some words that are repeated that might give us clues to what the thrust is of this. 2 times in this chapter, Jesus says, don't be alarmed, and then later, don't worry. So, inviting calm. And then 4 times, there's this word that's translated, beware, that means keep looking out, pay attention, pay attention. Pay attention the first time, don't be led astray. Pay attention, they will hand you over and bring you to trial. Pay attention, I've already told you everything. Pay attention, for you don't know when the season will come. I've already told you everything, but you don't know. But there are some things you don't know. And at the end of the chapter, 3 times in 2 verses, another word that means keep awake. So 7 times total, be alert, pay attention, beware, keep awake, keep awake, keep awake. Family Systems says that the first thing to do when there's a crisis, when you know something needs to change in the system, you're stuck, the first thing to do is to stay calm. Non-anxious, sometimes they call it. And what's the purpose of staying calm? It's so you can pay attention. pay attention to what's happening in the system. What's happening in me? What are the ruts that I keep getting stuck in? What role am I playing? What role are others playing? Staying calm, paying attention. Those are the things that move us toward being clear. And to help with clarity, I turn to Ephesians 6. Because Ephesians 6 is also about how do we view institutions and what is our work in the light of struggles with institutions. Ephesians 6 says, remember, we are not struggling against enemies of blood and flesh, but against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. If people are not our enemies, the people who are in conflict, how do we know what is? And here I want to actually quote Walter Wink with his concise statement. All forms, and this is what he says we are struggling against. All forms of institutional idolatry, whereby religion, commerce, education, or the state make their own well-being and survival, that is, the well-being and survival of the institution, the final criteria of morality, and by which they justify the liquidation of profits, the persecution of deviants, and the ostracism of opponents. All forms of institutional idolatry, whereby institutions make their own well-being and survival the final criteria of morality, and by which they justify the liquidation of profits, the persecution of deviants, and the ostracism of opponents. Now, Mennonite institutions, like many institutions in our society, have experienced a heyday since the end of World War II. I just want to throw this in, which may seem tangential, but it has been a big influence on my view of institutions. And that is an article written by economist and current Bluffton College president James Harder. And James is suggesting that this huge flourishing of institutions since World War II has been overgrowth. Not only can we not sustain that growth, says Harder, but those institutions are already too big to be sustainable. This is painful knowledge. And many of us in this room and in our families and workplaces have already experienced the insecurity or painful losses of working for institutions that are downsizing. I believe that Jesus is preparing his disciples for letting go of their temple. But he doesn't spend time describing to them what's being born, what's going to take its place. So what kind of clarity are they supposed to hang on to? Ephesians has this wonderful list of the weapons that we are to use in this struggle. And I can't go into them, but so many of them touch back on some of the sermons that you've been hearing about resilience. Speak the truth. Put on the belt of truth. Put on the breastplate of justice. Keep speaking out for those who are hurting, who have less power. Take the shield of faith. And Walter Wink says here that the shield of faith in this kind of struggle is both to protect us from the flaming arrows of guilt and shame, as well as from the subtle arrows of entrapment in the domination system. At the center of both Mark 13 and Ephesians 6 passage is a reference to the good news. Mark says, "When you're called upon to testify, remember that the good news must be proclaimed to all nations," meaning all human beings. And Ephesians 6 has this at its center of the weapons or the strategies that we are to use. Put on, as Rachel said, put on whatever footwear will help you proclaim the good news of peace. Mark has this wonderful image. Now, my husband's biggest critique of my sermons is just when I'm about to end, I launch out on a second sermon. So beware. Pay attention. And I would like to do that right now because I'd like to talk about this image in Mark 13 of Jesus ascending on the clouds, because that's the image that we've usually interpreted as the end times. But in fact, he's alluding to Daniel, and Jesus is not coming down on the clouds. He's going up. The human one is being vindicated by God. So instead of launching off on that sermon, I will just take a leap and say the good news of peace is that God is on the side of human beings, all human beings. It's the way of the human one that is being vindicated by God. And the path of Jesus is the path for peace with other human beings. Our struggle is against the powers that try to put human beings in competition with each other, that make us think some are in and some are out, that encourage us to participate in domination. As human beings, we are connected, but what connects us is not primarily institutions, but Jesus, the human one, and the God who made us in God's image. I want to tell a brief story and then wrap up. At the Indiana-Michigan delegate conference meetings, a year ago, so in the spring of 2015, which was before I had any idea that I would be serving in this role with you all, the highlight of that day of meetings for me was a report I heard from the conference credentialing team about its discernment meetings with Carl Shelley. Kevin Yoder, who continues with his wife Sharon as a pastor at Olive Mennonite Church, who was also a member of that credentialing team, stood up to make his report in a room that was, I think you could say, boiling with tension. In fact, a very loud and inflammatory speaker had just sat down. My memory is that Kevin radiated calm as he stood up to give his report. He briefly described the inability of his credentialing team to come to an agreement on what to do with Carl. And he confessed that he didn't know yet what the verdict of their team would be. But this is clear, he said. Every one of us on this credentialing team in this interview process has gained a deep respect and appreciation for Carl Shelley as a person of integrity and a follower of Jesus. And, he said, in this process of listening to Carl and listening to each other, We on the ministry credentialing team have formed a deep connection with each other. And although we have no idea how we are going to come to an agreement on this, we know that we are brothers and sisters. Stay calm, stay clear, and stay connected. Ephesians 6 ends with an admonition to persevere in prayer. Stay connected to the one who gives us these tools. I encourage you to stay connected in prayer, to persevere in prayer for all the saints. Kevin and his wife Sharon are still pastors at Olive and are often caught in the ongoing discussion in that congregation about their denominational membership. Pray for Kevin and Sharon. Pray for those who have and will lose jobs and be hurt in so many ways as this institutional disintegrating continues, this struggle. Pray for all the saints. Pray that together with them, we will be able to hang on to what's lasting, let go of what is passing. Pray that we will calmly nurture our faith, that we will look to Jesus and the Holy Spirit to help us speak the truth clearly, that we will proclaim the good news of peace and our connection to all human beings and to our Maker. Pray that our resilience will be the midwife to what's being born.